If you love this podcast and IPR, you probably know that it's fueled by listener dollars. Hi, I'm Rick Brewer, a talk show producer at Iowa Public Radio. And part of my job is connecting with Iowans who have stories to tell. When you contribute to IPR, you help make that possible. Membership contributions make up 57% of IPR's budget. That's huge and amazing. So do your part to support the podcast and programs you enjoy. Go to iowapublicradio.org and tap the red donate button. Thank you.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Last week was an important mile marker in the current Iowa legislative session, known as Funnel Week. That's the cutoff to push bills through a committee vote. With some exceptions, bills that did not make it through the so-called funnel, through a committee in either the House or Senate, are no longer viable for this session. Joining us to go through some of the bills that made it and some that didn't, James Q. Lynch is with us, political reporter for the Cedar Rapids Gazette. James, welcome back to the program.
Good to be with you, Ben.
Stephen Gruber Miller is with us as well from the Des Moines Register. He covers the Iowa State House and politics. Stephen, good to have you.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for having me.
And Katarina Sestarek, our own state government reporter. Hi, Katarina.
Hi, Ben.
Want to reach out to our listeners. We'll be covering as many of these bills. There are too many to discuss in any great depth. But if you've been following specific legislation, please give a call. You might have a question about it, about its future, about its present, if it's still viable, or a question about the legislative process. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Perhaps it's the warmer weather, Stephen, but I remember last year, of course, during our warmer weather, we had a lot of racial justice protests around the country, also here in Iowa. This is the first full legislative session since Iowans took to the streets to call for progress on racial justice. And I'm wondering what we have there in the way of legislation. We have Governor Reynolds back the Blue Act. Tell us, what has been happening in that area at the State House?
Right. So if you remember, last summer, the legislature unanimously passed a bill that would was meant to address police misconduct, make it easier to, provide penalties for that. The governor signed that. This year, in the governor's condition of the state address in January, she introduced, like you said, the Back the Blue Act that would increase penalties for assaulting law enforcement officers, add some additional protections for law enforcement. And she also proposed a ban on racial profiling by law enforcement. But what we saw happen last week is the House and Senate didn't take up that bill as proposed by the governor. Instead, they split it into pieces. And while most of that has moved forward, the ban on racial profiling that the governor has proposed did not.
Okay. So the protection for police protection is those parts are still viable moving forward. And you expect what?
Right. So there are bills that would, there are a couple of different bills. One of them actually will be debated in the Senate today that would allow law enforcement officers to get, for instance, the names of people who file complaints against them, provide them more protections sort of in the process. There's a separate bill that would enhance penalties for rioting, enhance penalties for assaulting police officers, require people who have been charged with certain crimes to be held in jail for 24 hours. That one has not come up for debate yet, but that's also out there still.
Mm-hmm. Okay. James, you've been covering a number of bills, legislation having to do with the pandemic. Mm-hmm. What can you point to there that has attracted your attention especially?
Well, as you might expect, there are several bills related to the pandemic, and several are still alive. Some have died along the way. One that's still alive would bar employers from requiring employees to have COVID vaccinations. There's also a bill that will affect a lot of small businesses and people who have been out of work that would exempt those PPP loans and federal jobless benefits from taxes. But another pair of bills that would establish sort of oversight panels to track how the government is spending pandemic relief funds and the response itself. Both of those are dead. So I guess legislators aren't interested in oversight of that kind of spending. And I guess one that really kind of piqued my interest is a bill to create a statewide immunization vaccination registry that doctors and other healthcare providers, when they immunize somebody, would submit that information to a statewide registry. And it seems sort of counterintuitive with a lot of the other legislation that's being advanced in regard to sort of less restrictions, less accountability in regard to vaccinations and the pandemic itself.
Right. On that registry, the immunization vaccination registry. So debate, it's alive, as you say, but there are voices speaking against it just because it would be, well, I guess, more government keeping track of people, which some people just generally oppose.
Right. And it's surprising to me that in sort of the atmosphere this year of less government and less big brotherism in many of the debates that we're seeing that advance.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Join our conversation if you have specific legislation, want to know more about a bill that we're talking about this hour with our legislative reporters. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Katerina, what is on the top of your list?
One of the new things this year that has moved forward and survived the funnel is these proposals dealing with big tech. As some supporters of the bill call it, these bills would take away tax incentives for tech companies that remove online content if a judge determines that that was constitutionally protected speech that shouldn't have been censored. So this would impact Iowa because companies like Facebook and Google have built data centers here, and cities have given tax incentives for those to be built. And this bill came from Senate President Jake Chapman, who said that tech companies' policies of trying to remove some potentially harmful content is biased toward conservatives. So this is meant to protect conservative speech online. And it would also block government contracts with tech companies that violate the bill. So this is a bill that the Senate advanced. The House advanced a scaled back version that would only apply when elected officials have their online content blocked by tech companies. So, you know, they bring up a lot that former President Trump had his Twitter account removed. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of that quote unquote cancel culture debate.
Right. And in the debate about this, though, Jake Chapman, others will call it censorship or claim First Amendment rights. Explain a little bit about this, because neither Twitter nor Facebook are the government. And in our Constitution, it says the government shall not, block free speech, right? So there is a debate about if this is actually a First Amendment issue, isn't there?
Right. That's what, you know, the Democrats who oppose the bill are saying, that, yeah, like First Amendment is about the government is supposed to protect people from having the government censor their speech, except in very limited cases. And this is something that, you know, the tech companies will say they are just trying to remove potentially harmful content and they're not biased toward conservatives. And then you have some of these conservatives who support this bill saying that social media is now considered a public square in this century. So it's just a lot of disagreement there.
Mm-hmm. James, I wonder if you had any thoughts on this bill, which has sort of garnered attention across the country as well. When we talk about social media, free discussion, is it the public square, even though it is private enterprise that owns the public square called Facebook, for instance?
Well, I think there is a lot of debate about what is the public square today. And we've seen this in cases elsewhere involving, I remember a case involving the Mall of America, whether or not that was the public square. Could people go there and demonstrate or protest as they would on, you know, the town square that we think of in a small town. And I think that's being applied to the internet now. What's sort of interesting to me is when you think about the state government has tried to reach out and has recruited Facebook and Google and Microsoft and companies like that to have a physical presence in Iowa. And now you have legislators who are threatening to punish them for their business practices. And I mean, exclusive, you know, we can debate whether or not they're making the right decisions on, you know, banning or prohibiting content from whoever. But, think about it in terms of the insurance industry in Des Moines or the Rockwell Collins presence in Cedar Rapids. If somebody wanted to take away their tax incentives, I'm sure we would hear a huge response from those communities, to protect those employers. And so it strikes me that maybe big tech in Iowa hasn't developed a legislative constituency yet that is saying, wait, hands off. These are, jobs and tax, this is part of our tax base. They haven't developed that sort of a constituency yet. Mm-hmm.
Stephen Gruber-Miller, let me turn to you with your eyes, I know, on an election bill. We've had a lot. This is, I don't know in how many states, perhaps it's at least dozens of states where Republicans are in control, that we've had more restrictive election laws on their way to being instituted. Iowa's no exception. Tell us about that.
Right. There's a bill that has actually passed the House and Senate and is on Governor Kim Reynolds' desk right now. We're waiting to see if she will sign that. That would shorten Iowa's early voting period from 29 days down to 20. And it would also close the polls an hour earlier for state and federal elections at 8 p.m. instead of 9 p.m. on Election Day. It would do several other things as well. There are new criminal charges for county auditors if they disobey the state. It would limit who can return somebody's absentee ballot for them. So these are things that Republicans have said are needed. They've cited concerns about the integrity of elections. They've said that this will bring uniformity and prevent county election officials from, violating state rules or acting differently state to state. Democrats are saying that this is a pattern of what they're calling voter suppression that we're seeing in other states around the country, Georgia being one that's considering restricting early and absentee voting. And they say this is derived from former President Donald Trump's false claims that the election was stolen from him in 2020, and it won't actually do anything to improve integrity or security of the election.
Right, and integrity and security, talk a little bit more about that, because as you listed off the parts of the election law bill that would be changed under this bill on the governor's desk, are any parts of it really about security and integrity? I mean, shortening the window for early election, that is really not about security, is it?
I don't think they've really made the argument that part of it is about security. They've talked about, limiting who can return somebody's absentee ballot, limiting county auditors from sending absentee ballot request forms to voters unless they've asked for one, things like that. They've also talked a lot about uniformity. The Republicans who control the legislature were upset with the actions of some county auditors last fall who mailed out absentee ballot request forms to voters, even with information filled in so that they could more easily request a ballot. And so it's some of those things that they say violated the state law and they need to be stopped from doing that again. So that's, I think, a big impetus of the bill. But, they also have constituents, right, who are listening to former President Trump and are concerned with the things he's raising, even though he hasn't provided proof. And there is no evidence of widespread fraud in Iowa. Mm-hmm.
Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. With us this hour, Stephen Gruber-Miller, you're hearing just there, the Des Moines Register reporter who covers State House, the Iowa State House and politics, James Q. Lynch of the Cedar Rapids Gazette, and our own Katarina Sestarik, 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to our phones. Isaac is with us in Iowa City. Welcome to our program, Isaac. Do you have your eye on a certain bill before the legislature currently?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I was just reached out to ask about a bill I saw this fall about, I think it was about school choice and about vouchers that would take tax money away from public schools and direct them to private schools. I was wondering where that bill's at in the Iowa legislature.
That is certainly one with a high profile, Isaac, in Iowa City. Thank you very much. Katerina, I wonder if I can turn to you and ask you where that legislation is. Katerina, are you there?
Yes, sorry. Governor Kim Reynolds' big school choice proposal is still alive. It's still eligible because the full Senate passed it quite a few weeks ago. But then over in the House, they split that proposal up into separate bills and did not end up advancing the part that would give sort of scholarships, state-funded scholarships for students from some public schools to go to private schools. So that part appears to be dead in the House, but anything can happen. You know, it didn't have the support to advance out of the House Education Committee at this time. But the portions about charter schools and about ending limits on open enrollment in some school districts, those parts did advance in the House.
Mm-hmm. Stephen, do you have a read on this, where this is going?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, like Katerina said, the whole proposal is technically alive since it's passed the Senate, but it's not a good sign for the final passage of these private school scholarships that the House Education Committee doesn't have the support to pass it right now. So while anything can happen, it seems like it's got a really tough road for that part. And if that's not moving forward, the biggest battle remaining in the House might be the part that makes it easier to create charter schools. It allows a new method of creating charter schools where a group of local people can apply to the state directly rather than going through the local school board to form a charter school. And Democrats have all sorts of concerns about this.
Okay. Thank you, Isaac, in Iowa City, for that question about the future of schooling and school funding in Iowa. Let's go to Ron. Ron is calling from Waterloo. Welcome, Ron.
Thanks. I wonder about the status of the bills to eliminate tenure in Iowa's public universities.
Okay. Let's see. I think that we've all been covering that. Stephen, would you like to jump in on that and remind us what this is about? Because it gained Iowa, if I'm remembering correctly, Stephen, Iowa would be the first and only state in the nation to ban tenure at its universities.
Right. So this bill, Republicans have proposed a version of this several times, but it's never gone very far. And this year is actually the first time that a proposal to ban tenure at the University of Iowa, the University of Northern Iowa, and Iowa State University has made it through a full committee. So there's a version of it that got through the House Education Committee, and it could get a floor vote. House Speaker Pat Grassley he didn't shut down the idea of it getting a floor vote. He has said, essentially, the argument this year has been from Republicans that they're concerned that professors and administrators at these public universities are, again, biased towards conservatives and biased, you know, that they're doing things that restrict conservative speech. And so they think that this is sort of a reason to maybe get rid of what they feel like are extra protections for these professors. You know, Democrats and actually business and research groups have said that there's a lot of, you know, money that comes in because of Iowa's universities, including two research universities, the University of Iowa and Iowa State University. So eliminating tenure at those places, they say, would hurt Iowa's ability to attract good faculty who could then, you know, do this research and bring this grant money into the state.
Mm-hmm. James, I'm interested in your thoughts on this, primarily because of what Stephen mentioned in the end, this when you say, okay, ban tenure among faculty at the three public universities. That's something that can be far-reaching in the number of areas of life. And I guess the people who are against this say what? This would create perhaps a flight of some of our top-level researchers.
Right, that's the argument, Ben. And a lot of times, the people who are attracting grant money and doing research that often pays off in terms of commercialization, are people who have tenure and are longtime members of the faculty, professors, you know, and here in Iowa, for example, at Iowa State, I mean, think about the research they do there. A lot of those people are longtime faculty members at the University of Iowa, in especially in health related areas with the hospital there. You know, so this is the effect. I think the people who are concerned about tenure and the protections that Stephen talked about, you know, are worried about conservative bias, or, you know, being biased against conservatives. But the impact, the financial impact for the universities as well as the state in general, could be far-reaching because of, not just because of the research dollars, but because of what they develop because of that research. You know, if you look around at Iowa City and the Corville area, you know, there are a whole lot of small firms in the healthcare and tech sectors that have been spun off from research done at the university. And the same is true in Ames, the Ames area.
Right. And James, the numbers here can be pretty big, too. When we talk about government grants in healthcare, in the ag industry, these are, you know, totaling what, hundreds of millions of dollars that are, you know, tied to certain labs, certain tenured faculty, right?
Exactly. I mean, think about livestock research being done at Iowa State, healthcare research being done at Iowa, at research institutions like this. They really are industries in themselves and employing a lot of people who are earning good wages. I mean, it's exactly the sort of industry and jobs that the state wants to attract. And the danger that critics point out about a bill like this is it sends a bad message to people who might be considering coming to work at Iowa State or at the University of Iowa. If they see that the legislature wants to end tenure, this protection that I think most people take for granted at institutions like that, that their tenure will be there. And if the legislature wants to take it away, it just sends a bad signal.
Mm-hmm. James, before our break, we have Katarina, do you want to jump in there? Okay. Thought I heard something.
No, I think they covered it.
Yeah. Okay. James, real quick before we go into our break and return for our second half, do you have a feeling, a sense of where this is going, this unique band tenure bill?
Well, I think maybe it's one of those where somebody, you know, has a bee in their bonnet, and they push this, and later on, you know, folks say, well, do we really want to do this? I'm sure the region's lobbyists and a lot of other interest groups are lobbying lawmakers not to advance this beyond getting through the first funnel. And maybe, I don't know, shall we say, cooler heads will prevail.
Okay. A bill banning tenure at the public university is still alive. We're looking at what survived the funnel week last week with James Lynch, Stephen Gruber-Miller, and Katarina Sestarek. I'm Ben Kiefer, back in just a moment.
Iowa Republican leaders encourage wearing a mask at the Capitol, but oppose making it a mandate.
We have no way to enforce that, even if we were to say everyone in the caucus has to have a mask.
This worries Democratic leaders.
I'm concerned and want to avoid, you know, turning the legislature into a super spreader event.
Legislative leaders share their goals and concerns, and so does the governor on the podcast Under the Golden Dome. Listen to the new episode now at iowapublicradio.org.
And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today we're looking at what made it through the funnel and what did not. Last week, a mile marker in the current Iowa legislative session, known as Funnel Week. Bills that did not make it through the funnel, namely ones that did not make it through a committee in either the House or the Senate, are, with some exceptions, no longer viable for the session. So we're talking about where we stand in this legislative session with our own Katarina Sestarek, also Stephen Gruber-Miller of the Des Moines Register, and James Q. Lynch of the Cedar Rapids Gazette. If you have your eye on a piece of legislation, want to know how the process works, or want to know where a certain bill is, I bet you this crew, one of them at least, can answer your questions about it. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Katerina, let me go to you to talk a little bit about the governor's ethanol bill. What does that involve?
Right. The governor proposed an ethanol bill that would require almost all gas sold in Iowa to have at least 10% ethanol blended in. It could be raised to 15% in 4 years under the bill. It also has requirements for biodiesel. And so this is something that has really brought up a lot of opposition from gas stations and truck stops. Some of these big, you know, at Casey's and Come and Go, some of the big gas station companies in Iowa are really opposed to this because they're saying that this would require them to spend a bunch of money on expensive equipment upgrades. But the renewable fuel interests and farm interests, corn and soybean, they are supportive of this because they're saying this will help the renewable fuels industry in Iowa and help grow rural economies. And so this is something that two Senate committees advanced it ahead of the funnel, so it's still alive. But at both of them, the lawmakers were saying that the bill isn't ready for debate. So it sounds like they want to still consider significant changes to it before they would consider passing it.
Mm-hmm. TC is someone in Humboldt listening who has a lengthy email, but one of his parts that he talks about, and Stephen, let me pitch this to you, is what he calls a rollback of local control in some of these bills. He talked about diversity training in the 1619 project, to be specific. He wants to know, among other things, what the status of that is, and perhaps you can first remind us what that project is and how it fits into the legislation that's being considered or dead.
Sure. Yeah. So I think the listener is talking about a couple of different bills there. Let's start with the one that would have banned the teaching of the 1619 project in public schools in Iowa. That legislation is dead. That the 1619 project is a project from the New York Times Magazine that looks at the origins of slavery in the United States and sort of reframes the idea of the founding of America to center the experience of Black Americans and the contributions that they made to America. Republicans had criticized it, saying that they believe it said, you know, untruth. They said it wasn't accurate and that it was basically, they called it leftist propaganda, but there clearly wasn't support for that to advance. Another bill that was brought up was about diversity training. This bill is alive. It would ban the teaching of quote unquote divisive concepts, like the idea that Iowa is quote unquote fundamentally racist or sexist. And this would also just mandate First Amendment training at educational institutions and other things of that nature. A version of this bill actually is up for debate in the Senate today. I guess I'll say these sort of fit a trend of, we were talking earlier about tenure, and there's a lot of bills that have been considered, some of which are still alive, some of which are not, that really were targeting education institutions, whether that's the universities or K-12. And a lot of the time it's around concerns, like we've been talking about, that some of these institutions are not being fair to conservatives, not really giving a fair say to conservative speech. So this is a sort of a theme of the year that we've seen in lots of pieces of legislation.
Mm-hmm. James, you see that theme there. If you would look at this on a map, the counties with the three public universities, for instance, are very much sort of Democratic counties in our state, aren't they?
Right. And all of the urban counties, or what we consider urban here in Iowa, those counties in Iowa tend to be blue counties, and the rest of the state tends to be pretty red, the rural areas and the smaller towns. So you're seeing that sort of tension in a lot of this legislation that's being advanced by the Republican-controlled legislature. In some ways, considering that Republicans have controlled the legislature for about I forget how many years now. You'd think they would have fixed all these problems by now, but they're still going at it bill by bill.
Let's go to another caller. Joe is with us, I believe, from Donahue. Joe, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you. I have two concerns. The first one involves charter schools. I want to know whether it's true that the charter schools that might develop from this bill would be able to decide for themselves which students they want to accept and which students they do not. My fear is that if they have this power, then they will just take the so-called preferred students, and I think we can all use our imagination to know what those preferred students would be. They would be white, and they would not have mental or physical disabilities, et cetera, et cetera. So I think this would be very dangerous if they had this power to accept whoever they want. That's my first concern. The other one is that Black Lives Matter. Was anything done by the legislature, or do they plan on doing anything that would satisfy some of the goals that the Black Lives Matter people wanted, or have they kind of gone in the opposite direction?
Okay,
those are
Joe.
My two concerns.
Very good. Thank you, Joe, calling from Donahue. Who wants to jump in there?
I can take that one. So let
okay,
me start
Stephen,
with the
yep.
Let me just start with the charter schools question. The charter schools, Republicans say these charter schools would have to accept all students. So they say that these are public charter schools. They can't be religious. They can't charge tuition, and they would have to accept all students and adhere to, other sort of requirements from things like the Iowa Civil Rights Act and things like that. So, regarding the Black Lives Matter legislative agenda, we sort of talked a little bit earlier about how the governor's proposed ban on racial profiling doesn't seem to be moving forward. I think largely the Republican-controlled law legislature is putting forward more of a sort of pro-police agenda and less of things that would address racial disparities or issues like that. There's they are trying once again to amend the state constitution to say that people with felony convictions can regain the right to vote after they've completed their sentences. But I don't think it's at all clear if the Senate wants to do that. They've held that proposal up for the past 2 years now. So there's really not a lot more moving that would address sort of those concerns. And if I'm forgetting something, please, one of you jump in and let me know.
Mm-hmm. I would add to that.
Katarina, perhaps you can jump in. Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. I would just add that, you know, the legislative Black caucus, Democrats in that group just last week were saying that, you know, the agenda they've seen in this legislative session has been, they characterized it as retaliation for the progress that was made last year toward racial justice. And that they've seen things like attempts to ban the 1619 Project, as we talked about earlier. Things like ending voluntary diversity plans at a few Iowa school districts, and then these pro-police bills advancing and not the anti-racial profiling proposal. They see all of that as just taking Iowa in the opposite direction, opposite of what was talked about in protests last year.
Mm-hmm. James, you were wanting to get in on this as well, on Joe's question.
Right, and I was just going to talk about how the legislature approved the More Perfect Union bill last year that addressed many of the concerns that the Black Lives Matter movement had in the legislative Black caucus. And as Katarina was just saying, the caucus has some concerns now that the legislature is sort of going in the wrong direction on those matters, such as racial a bill to ban racial profiling by the police. But they did pass that legislation last year. And I guess now we're seeing whether or not they stick with it or they want, you know, they're backsliding or tweaking or however, you know, somebody wants to put it. But some of the legislation this year appears to be kind of a retreat from the More Perfect Union legislation from 2020.
I will say, too, that another agenda item that some of these Black Lives Matter protesters have raised is legalizing marijuana, or you know, which is disproportionately affects Black people in Iowa, right? They're arrested at disproportionate rates. And there's no interest among the Republican legislators to legalize marijuana. There is a bill out there that would lower penalties for first offense possession of small amounts of marijuana, but I'm not sure how much interest there is in that either.
Mm-hmm. If you just joined us, Stephen.
I think that died in the final dentist, to decriminalize it to a $25 civil fine.
That I don't remember is not a good sign for its chances.
Okay. James Lynch and Stephen Gruber-Miller, along with Katerina Sestarek, on this edition of River to River, as we look at what survived the funnel that has made it through committee, either the House or the Senate, by the end of last week. And we have about 10 minutes left in our program. We'll go. Let's go back to our callers. Ann is with us in, I believe, Jackson County, Iowa. Ann, I see on my screen you want to talk about something that's been around for decades, something that I grew up with. I actually remember when the bottle bill wasn't around, and I don't know if you fall into that age category or not, but you have a question about it.
Yes, I do fall into that age category. And there was a bill that made it through a committee, and the language, the way I understand it, was going to allow the grocery stores and convenience stores to not have to accept returns if there was a redemption center. It was going to raise the amount that the redemption centers got to keep, but it was not going to raise it from a nickel as far as what the public would see when they bought or returned containers. And it wasn't going to add anything like the sports drinks or water bottles, but there was some kind of ending date in there. And I couldn't find anything that said if it was just going to end this new language or if that ending date was going to end the whole redemption process. Yeah. So do your experts have that information?
Well, let's find out. And Katerina, I think you've had your eye on this. There are, what, competing proposals to change the bottle bill. This has been batted around for years. What can you tell us?
Yeah, I'm sorry I don't have that exact answer to that question, but there are multiple bottle bill changes floating around the legislature that have advanced through the funnel deadline. The Senate has two, one that would allow stores to not take empty bottles and cans if there is a redemption center within 20 miles, and it would also raise the amount of money that goes to redemption centers. The Senate also has a bill that would require an accounting of the money that's left behind by customers who don't return their empty bottles and get their deposit back. And then the House has one that would also allow grocery and other stores to not accept bottles if there's a redemption center within 10 or 15 miles. And so really, none of these have a ton of support because the key stakeholders can't agree on any of these. Some Republicans who voted to advance one of these bills said that they weren't really happy with it. So it's still really not clear what's going to happen with these, because there's been attempts at changing the bottle bill over many, many sessions, and it just hasn't happened.
James, let me turn to you before this hour ends, because I think you have your eye on a number of bills that have to do with car travel, traveling around the state. Of course, a couple sessions ago, traffic speed cameras were a big issue, controversial issue. That's present in this session as well?
It is. There's a bill that advanced that would prohibit most traffic, automated traffic enforcement devices, traffic cameras, speed cameras, whatever you want to call them. It would allow a few, one here in the Cedar Rapids area on an S-curve on Interstate 380, but it would ban most of those cameras used around the state in Des Moines and suburban Des Moines and other cities. There's another bill that would ban the use of handheld communication devices, your phone, for example. It would have to be hands-free. That bill's been around for a while, but it's advanced again this year. We'll see if it makes it through the next funnel. And one that keeps getting proposed and never makes it too far is one that would create an offense for drivers who camp or loiter in the left lane of divided highways. That's one that seems to cause a lot of driver frustration when they can't get around somebody. So these bills are still alive. Most of them have been around, proposed a number of years. Maybe this is the year that they get enacted.
Mm-hmm. Back to the traffic, red light, speed cameras, that issue that has been so big in past years. What's that issue there? Because this is also one where we can say it's local control or not, and the legislature reaching in Cedar Rapids' case to stop their use of traffic and speed cameras. And then there's the safety issue, which is debated. Do they increase safety? That S-curve is a great example there by Quaker Oats in Cedar Rapids. That's mm-hmm. Can be a high-speed S-curve, and I think speed cameras did reduce accidents and fatalities there, didn't it?
Right, and that's what the Cedar Rapids police say, and they point to it as a sort of the perfect place for using the automated traffic enforcement devices because people sometimes are going too fast around that curve, and because it's a dangerous place to have officers either parked or pulling people over in that location. So the speed camera is a better way to enforce speed limits and safe driving there. And yeah, it is a local control issue where cities have said, we want to reduce speeds in these areas. We want to stop people running red lights, and they point to evidence that that's working. Lawmakers will tell you that, local government is exceeding their authority, that these are, big brothers, out of state companies that are operating these cameras and collecting revenue from it, and as well as the cities. So, yeah, there's a lot of opposition to it. I wouldn't be surprised to see that bill pass this year.
Mm. Stephen, we're running out of time. What else is on your list that you'd like to get out and discuss that we haven't yet so far that you're watching?
I wanted to bring up a bill that would remove the requirement to have a permit to carry firearms or to buy firearms. Mm-hmm. That advanced through a House committee this year. We'll see how far it gets. They proposed similar legislation in the past, but I think that there seems like there are more people who are enthusiastic for it now. So you would not have to, like I said, have a permit to carry or a permit to acquire firearms. If you were buying a gun through a federally licensed dealer, so like at a gun store, you would still have to either undergo a background check or present a permit, which proves that you've undergone a background check. Opponents, gun safety groups and Democrats are concerned that this would essentially is a sort of a backdoor to removing background checks for buying guns, like from a private citizen, from unlicensed sellers. So if you just purchased a gun from, a friend or neighbor, you wouldn't have to have a permit, and therefore you wouldn't have had to go through a background check anymore. Mm-hmm. Sort of to compensate for that, this bill would increase the penalty for selling to someone who's not legally allowed to own a firearm.
Mm-hmm. Katerina, we don't have much time, but I wonder if you could give us a quick update on the governor's broadband bill.
Sure. So the governor proposed a lot of money for broadband. It would be $450 million that the state would pay for broadband expansion over the next 3 years. And a lot of people, business groups, rural development groups are very excited about this, about bringing better, faster internet to rural areas. And this advanced, but it seems like there's still a lot that needs to be worked out. It's not clear that lawmakers are going to commit to giving all the funding that the governor asked for this. And the bill also would require that for internet providers to qualify for the grants in the bill, they would have to provide very fast internet speeds, and it's possible that those requirements could be lowered in amendments to the bill because there's been some pushback from internet providers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, also interesting, last week we had the program director of the Iowa Business Council, which is represents the largest companies. The CEOs on that council are the CEOs of the largest companies present in Iowa. And I know they said the broadband expansion, upgrading of broadband in Iowa was really essential on their list for making Iowa more attractive business community. And we'll watch that. And thank you so much for keeping us apprised of where we are with this legislation. Katarina Sestarek of Iowa Public Radio, James Lynch, political reporter for the Cedar Rapids Gazette, and Stephen Gruber-Miller of the Des Moines Register. Thank you so much for lending us your expertise and all that reporting.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you very much.
Tomorrow on this program, we'll look back at how education in the state was disrupted when the pandemic struck 1 year ago. We'll talk about K through 12 schools, the challenges they faced in the past year. Also, higher ed. We'll have the Gazette's Vanessa Miller on for that as well. River to River is produced by Matt Alvarez, Caitlin Harrop, and Rick Brewer. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.